Good Friday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Nashville. My name is Braden Gall, Derek Mason, Marquise Munson, back in the saddle for at least a couple of days here before the New Year's holiday as we tick off all the holidays until the end of the holidays, which of course will take place next week. I don't know if people realize this, but the college football playoff semifinals are taking place tomorrow. Tomorrow, like on the 28th of December, not New Year's Day, not New Year's Eve, tomorrow on the 28th, 3 o'clock Central Time, LSU, Oklahoma, and of course followed immediately by Clemson and Ohio State. The Tennessee Titans have a win and you're in situation on Sunday. The Nashville Predators are on an absolute roll right now, finally riding the ship, even though they're still chasing down the wild card. What a sports weekend coming out of the holiday. Hope everybody had a good holiday. Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Festivus for the rest of us. Whatever it is you may celebrate, we do hope everybody had a relaxing and wonderful evening or time. I do not have relaxing times yet with children. Our job is essentially, Marquise, to rile them up as much as humanly possible and then try to put them to bed on Christmas Eve so they can come down and see all the fun stuff that Santa delivered to them. That is one of the first times I've tried to do that because my daughter is now old enough to understand all of that stuff. And getting her riled up at like 6 o'clock on Christmas Eve to then try to put her to bed is going to be like sort of Oklahoma's defense trying to stop Joe Burrow.
Hey, man.
We had no chance.
You hate to see it, man, because I have no kids. So guess what I got to do? I got to drink bourbon, eat Christmas cookies, and watch Home Alone 2 repeatedly on Christmas Day.
How many times did you watch Home Alone 2 on Christmas Day?
I watched Home Alone 1 and 2, and then I rewatched 1.
Repeating the bourbon is fine. That's good.
Yeah.
And then by the time you've repeated the bourbon, then you're going to go back for more cookies. It's repeating the movie that I have the issue with. We did Christmas Vacation for a little bit. We did a lot of The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, new version, which is actually really, really good.
I grew up on the Dr. Seuss version. The new Grinch would scare children, though.
He's a scary Grinch. But he's not like... This is the animated one, I guess. So, like, Pixar. Maybe it's not Pixar. I don't know.
I thought you were talking about the real life. That Grinch is like
yeah.
Creepy.
I can't show that to the 3 year old. But she loves it because he's like super cordial and nice. And even though he's like stealing Christmas the entire time, like he's just very cordial about the whole thing. He's like very nice to his dog Max, and you know. So the kids were into it, man. They had a great time. So I hope everybody had a wonderful holiday.
There's
Derek,
a video of
Derek,
like
how was your holiday
of like a life size Grinch.
It was
like
good.
Chasing
I spent it with the kids, and you know. And you will realize this, Brayton.
Oh no!
No, it's something good.
Okay,
don't get me wrong. This is good.
I need good right now.
Yeah,
dude.
This is good. As your kids get older, Christmas becomes less stressful.
That is the most wonderful thing I've heard in three days.
Christmas becomes less stressful, especially when your kids are close at age, because my kids are, and your kids are, what, 3 years apart?
No, my kids are 18 months apart.
Yeah, so it's even better. Yeah,
they're almost Irish twins.
They're even better. Because
the clouds are parting, and I'm hearing angels singing right now in my headset.
As they get older.
Oh, it's all I'm hearing.
As they get older, they want less things. And then they tell you specifically what they want.
But don't those things get more expensive?
But here's the thing.
I need a computer.
No, but here's the thing. You got time to get everything together
and then purchase it.
Yeah. And then two, you just don't have to run around like, what does Mary want? You're trying to figure out everything because they tell you, Dad, Mom, this is what we want.
Yeah, that's true. There's no guesswork.
Exactly.
Involved.
And even,
so you know you're going to get it right.
And even though sometimes you want Christmas for them to open that present and be like, surprise, even though you don't get that, they're happy because they're getting exactly what they
want. And I am a terrible gift getter.
Mm-hmm.
And God bless my family. They're in Florida. My parents right now are in Florida. Uh-huh. They're tough to buy gifts for because they have everything they need. So it's like, it's tough to buy something for them. Now you have to just, again, the idea is to go back to being just thoughtful and find something that you think they're going to like. And so I did. I found something I thought my dad would like and my mom would like, and we did a good job. They're just tough to buy for because they have everything they would ever need. So it's just tough, you know. And I will say that of all the people that bought gifts for the kids, like the whole family, you know, always chips in and buys a little something. Everybody's got a gift because they want to make the girls happy. Mm-hmm. A few of them pandered, and a few of them didn't pander.
Mm.
And the reaction to the panderers is why you pander.
Ah.
And we live in a society of pandering right now. That's all you do is just pander to the people that love you, and then you never have to worry about ever having your feelings hurt about anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just pander. And so, like, my brother-in-law and my other brother-in-law and those two couples and, like, a cousin, the three of them pandered like crazy.
Oh,
they got, like, frozen cups and frozen skirts and frozen this and frozen that. And my mom and dad bought them, like, some frozen stuff. That, to me, is called pandering.
No, that to me.
And it makes them go crazy. They love it. Mm-hmm. And then, like, my mother-in-law buys them this really awesome, really cool, like, bird feeder nest thing for the yard that's going to, like, sit out there in the yard. And it's
That's not pandering,
No,
though.
It's so beautiful. It's awesome. Me and Haley think it's a great gift. Maren opens it up and is like, what's this wooden box? and then like throws it aside and goes back to like her. I'm not kidding, guys. She got like neon pink like Jordans that have like Elsa and Anna on them.
Oh wow!
So they look like Jays, but they're like frozen Jays.
Oh my god!
and she's had them for 3 days and they already look like they're a year and a half old. I don't know.
She had those shoes on all day.
Yes, every day. She wanted to wear them to bed. But that's pandering, right?
Uh-huh.
And so you can go one of two ways with a 3-year-old. You can try to pander, or you can try to get them something that they might actually like long term really like. But it's hard to get something for a 3-year-old long term.
Well, you see, grandparents typically they start off getting what the kid like. They know what if the kid's into Mickey Mouse, they get some Mickey Mouse stuff and they want to make it. But as they get older, they tend to kind of go away from that and get them specifically what they want. If they want some money, they'll send them some money and everything else. And then
everybody didn't want money, by the way.
Yeah. So Bailey and DJ are so at this point in time.
Hey, Dad, I want this.
Yeah, they're easy to shop for, especially now. Because Bailey's in school, so she has to get a lot of things because she's in school. And everything she gets typically is for school, you know, whether it's computer, iPad, something she gets for school. And then DJ, this kid,
just give me some in-game purchases for Fortnite.
He said, I just want something. I just want you to do this to my car. That's it.
Isn't that like 3 years in a row he's done that?
Yeah. Well, this is only
didn't
his
last
second
year
he
put on some tires or something?
Yeah, last that was for his birthday.
Okay.
For his birthday, put on tires. And then this year he wanted this grill and his exhaust and these things on his window.
He doesn't have one of those Mustangs that just is like super, super loud and obnoxious, is it?
Nah, it's loud, but it's not super, super loud. Yeah.
Like a low, sexy loud, but not a. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, I've seen him. So
what are you making up for, dude?
He got that, and he was fine. And I ended up getting him like one or two other things that he wanted. Then Bailey, I got her something she wanted. And it was fairly easy, you know, shopping for them. And I think I'm the hardest person to shop for.
Yeah, because you buy whatever you need.
Yeah, and they're like, what are you
doing? I'm the same way. It's like if I see something I want or need in life, I'm going to just go get it.
Exactly.
And I'll probably have done all the work to decide which one's the best one for me. And I've got a spreadsheet, and there are four options, and here's the one that's the best price point, here's the one that's best quality. I've done
this
all the work.
Where you get it from.
Because that's just how my brain works. Like, I'm going to shop for the best thing, and then I'm not going to spend any time in the store. My wife goes shopping. I go purchasing.
No,
I go into the store.
I go on
the
internet.
I get the item and I leave.
No,
my mom just bought stuff for my apartment now. And she's like, here's a belt bag of towels. I'm like, yeah, thank you, Mom. I appreciate that. Here's a shower curtain. I'm like, yeah, thank you. I did need it, you know. But
you were showering without a curtain this whole time?
I got a curtain, but my mom believes in this thing of like rotating the curtains.
Mama came to visit and said, we need this.
Okay, he needs this. Why does boy still get these rags? These things, like,
I'm like, Mom, I just bought those rags like 3 months ago. No, you got to rotate them.
You're obviously not doing laundry, son.
Exactly. So mom always gets you something you need.
And it's funny, like this bird house thing, feeder, like it's going to be awesome. They're going to love it because it's going to go out in the yard.
Eventually they will.
And like we've got a bunch of cardinals and bluebirds in our yard. So like there's these big birds. Like, and it will be a really cool experience. And Haley and I are like really excited about it. We're like, this is really cool. And Maren took one look at it and said, what's this? And then moved on to the stuff. And so it's it. You got a decision to make when you're buying gifts for 3-year-olds, man.
That's how kids are. But you know what?
Santa did a pretty good job, though.
You know what? I am so, so, so happy it's over with.
Amen.
The minute the kids, you know, open the gifts,
The tree's in the box and put in the attic?
I'm putting the tree in the box in the attic pretty soon here. As soon as the kids opened their gifts and we sat down at 8.
On to Cincinnati. On to Cincinnati. Yeah,
sat down at 8. I was done.
I'm with you, dude.
I was like, whew, it's over with.
That was 6 weeks that I'm never going to get
back
again.
Now we got 64 more days of this, or 63 more days of this now to try to figure it out.
Maren yesterday, so I had the kids by myself each of the last two nights, and Maren was going to bed, and she goes, is Santa going to come again? I said, no.
He's done.
364 days, if you're good. You got to behave for 364 days.
Santa is on a long, dude, long break.
He works hard to build up to that one day of action. And then, you know,
Did you guys take, which was really fun, Christmas night, the kids and I went down to GLOW Nashville.
We did GLOW on Monday.
It's Monday night. It's really cool.
The kids really loved it, man.
Yeah, my son and daughter. What night were you down there? Christmas night.
We went down the 23rd on Monday night. Okay. And yeah, they had a blast. Now, like, they, you know, they're in bed at like 7.
Uh-huh.
So we got there like at 4:45. It opens at 5. We were there before it opens. And so we were there for like they maybe made it like an hour and a half, maybe. Uh-huh. Like after that, they were
ready.
Yeah, well, you know, most other humans in the event wanted them to leave, is what I think. Because if Maren didn't have to do the one thing she wanted to do, that was it. We walked inside the big Santa's workshop, and we were like, let's go see Santa. Looked up at the line and said, we're not going to see Santa.
Nah, too long.
About a two-second decision. All right, so we have a huge show. Listen, we'll get back onto football here because we got a huge show. I can't remember a weekend quite like this. Again, the college football playoff games are this weekend, folks. And the Titans-Texans play this weekend. Week 17 of the NFL, you got Eagles and the Cowboys not knowing who's going to win that division. Every single seed is up for grabs, what feels like, in the NFC. You don't know who the final wild card is going to be in the AFC. Obviously, the Titans, if they win, they are in. So, listen, there's a question I have about the Texans' decision-making process through all of this that I feel like I can't figure out an answer to it. And I'll ask you, Derek, what that question is, and Munson as well. Off and running here on a Friday edition, back in the saddle. After the holidays, huge weekend, week 17 in college football playoff stuff. So what is the decision that Bill O'Brien and the Texans have to make? I'll ask the question, and I'll hope you two guys can explain it to me. That's it. Morning Drive, off and running here on a Friday. ESPN 102.5 The Game. NFL fams, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show. Start your morning off with the kickoff from 11 to 1 p.m., followed by the NFL pregame show featuring Jarrett Stillman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders live from George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 1 until 3 p.m. prior to the Titans taking on the Houston Texans. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. Morning Drive, Derek Mason, Braden Gall. And my only question, and who knows what their decision-making process is going to be on this for the Texans and Bill O'Brien and the coaching staff, but they will know at kickoff whether or not the Chiefs have locked up the 2 or the 3 seed. And so they'll know if they're locked into that 4 seed or not. I totally get that if at halftime they realize that the Chiefs had lost a game and they have a chance to move up in the standings, get to the 3 seed, and not face the Titans the next week for the third time in 4 weeks, I see the idea of trying to win the game, to play the Steelers and win the 3 seed. That makes sense to me. Outside of that scenario, with a Chiefs win, who also could move up to the 2 seed, by the way, outside of that, Derek, I don't understand the risk of Deshaun Watson, a guy who's had multiple knee injuries, who's been, you know, punctured lung last year, couldn't fly on a plane to Jacksonville. Like, this is a guy who takes a beating. And he is the only reason you will ever win anything in this playoff run if you're the Texans. I do not understand the concept of playing Deshaun Watson for more than a half of football if that. So, again, barring a Chiefs loss and the Texans realizing they can move up and play the Steelers, let's say, hypothetically, as the 3 seed and they get to host the Steelers and old Duck Hodges / Mason Rudolph, that feels like a win, right?
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, I don't see a reason why the Texans should play anybody. And I don't to me, if I'm in that locker room, if I'm in that organization, I'm looking at Bill O'Brien going, dude, we have got to protect our assets here.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. But I don't think in this situation they're going to go into the game thinking that, because what you got to understand is they got to play the next following week regardless. And if they – it's not like they're in a situation like the Baltimore Ravens or the Patriots or potentially the Chiefs where, you know, they get a week to rest before they play their first game. So they can afford to kind of rest everybody because they don't – they
turn,
know.
Turn this into your bye week.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes and no. You can, but if guys are not injured, coaches typically, if guys are not injured, coaches are not going to, or if they hadn't been injured during the season, coaches are not just going to pull individuals. They will let them play and then see how the game's going and then potentially pull them. But they're not going to, you know, they're not in the situation that Baltimore Patriots, I'm just going to say those two teams right now, the Baltimore and the Patriots are.
Well, the Patriots could fall out of the bye week.
Yeah, they can. They can.
The Chiefs could take it.
So they need to play everybody. They need to win this game. But I'm just saying, as we sit now, they are not in those positions where, you know, we can sit some guys, or they can play the first quarter and then, you know, just pull them after that. I think the Texans are in a position right now where they got to stay, because here's the fear, I think, with those around the Houston Texans organization and even the fans. Because Houston's so erratic, you don't want a team like that taking time off. You don't want a team like that just sitting their players and them not playing.
Well, couldn't that just be their down week?
Yeah, that could be.
Like, listen, but, we know we're going to lose to Denver every 4 weeks,
yeah,
and give up a 38 burger. Why don't we just let's just intentionally do it this week?
Yeah, and that's the reason why I don't think they're going to do it. I think Bill O'Brien's going to play his guys, and then kind of look at the game, see how it's going, and then kind of make his decision based upon there. But I don't think he's going to go into the game and say, Deshaun Watson, you're not playing.
No, I think they're all going to start. I agree with you. I'm just saying, like, the second he is breathed on incorrectly. Mm-hmm. If he takes a sack in the first series, I'm going, dude, I'm taking you out of there, dude. Mm-hmm. I'm not playing you. And all of this, of course, is about getting the Titans a W. And if the Titans, and the other angle of this, and this is sort of the opposite end of the spectrum, Derrick Henry's could be playing his final game as a Tennessee Titan in theory, right?
Yeah,
in theory. I think we all believe they're gonna do what they need to do to try to get him re-signed. But there's a chance it is his final game in a Tennessee Titans uniform, which means. You do the opposite of what Bill O'Brien might do with Deshaun Watson, which is use up every ounce of Derrick Henry you possibly can. Because if there's a chance he's never coming back or you're not going to get him again and somebody else, who cares? Use every inch, every ounce, every carry you can possibly squeeze out of Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm.
36 carries.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
He's sending him back to Earl Campbell
days. Right. Like, why even... Because, like, there's no other way you're going to get into the playoffs to make a run is without Derrick Henry playing extremely well.
You're absolutely right.
If there's a chance he's not coming back, then don't have to worry about his future health, which, again, is a terrible way to look at it, but I'm just trying to
It is what it is.
Let's
it's
be
real
about
yeah.
this. Like, use up Derrick Henry for everything he's got, and on the flip side, if I'm Bill O'Brien, I'm going, like, the second Deshaun Watson is breathed on incorrectly, I'm putting him on the bench. Both of those things, to me, tell me that the Titans can win the game.
No, you are, in theory, you are absolutely right. And head coach and the way he view his teams the last game of the season, when they, not to say they don't have anything to play for, but they will understand truly what they have to play for right around halftime. So in theory, you're right. But I just think the way the Houston Texans, their history, the way that they've played.
Lose first round pick. First round games?
Yeah, they lose first round games. They're never really, you know, they look like, one minute they look like the best team in the AFC, then the next minute they look like the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
And it's just so up and down. I don't think Bill O'Brien wants to take that chance with his team, you know, sitting a whole week and then having to come out and potentially play the Titans again or the Kansas City Chiefs or the Buffalo Bills, you know, and have to play that hard four games. So to me, he would rather these guys go out there and play. And then, based upon how the game is going,
I know, you're
kind of,
right.
You know, pull guys here and there. I think Deshaun Watson might be the last guy he pulls Or he might just pull them all at one time. Who's the backup?
I thought it was still A.J. McCarron.
Yeah, A.J. McCarron. Is he still there? Goodness gracious.
I would let him sling it for three quarters.
Yeah. You might still end up winning a game A.J. McCarron.
I know.
You know? I mean, it's
now,
just...
Now, listen, he told us a long time ago Will Fuller's not going to play.
Yeah, Will Fuller's not. So, that's one guy I would pull because his hamstring, pun intended.
And like the fake injury report that they all put out on Christmas Day, which is hilarious to me. The fake injury report, of course, they had Adoree Jackson for the Titans not practicing, but they had Nuke Hopkins not practicing either. And it's kind of like, well, you know, like if this was a real week, would he really be practicing? Like, it's hard to gauge on like these fake Christmas practice reports what exactly is taking place. I know they're supposed to do it with the best sort of guess at what reality would be. But if I'm the Texans, I have a 0.0% chance of winning a playoff game without those two players, Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins. I don't know why you would risk either of them in a game that largely means nothing to you. You've already clinched the division. There's a small chance you can move up. Certainly that makes sense. I understand if you beat the Titans and you move up to the 3 seed, you play the Steelers at home, and maybe playing them at home is far better than playing Buffalo. It probably is, and I understand that, so I get that angle. But like you said, Derek, if you're all of a sudden down 17-3 and Deshaun Watson's taking 3 sacks and it's halftime, why in the world would you bring him back? In the meantime, if I'm the Titans, I am handing the ball to Derrick Henry every single chance I get, because there's, again, same thing with Tannehill, there's a chance that these guys are playing their final games in a Titans uniform. I don't think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I think they will do everything in their power to bring them back, but who knows what's going to happen in the future? You don't know what's going to happen. So, again, I think it sets up well for the Titans to be in good shape on Sunday for this game, 3:25 Central Time. But there's also this other part of me that's like, I've lived in this city for too long and I've seen the Titans in this situation too many times.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you used the word flat during the commercial break.
Yeah, that's my fear with the Titans, is that because we don't know if Adoree Jackson's playing. I'm leaning more toward I don't think he's playing. I think they would rather, if it's up in the air, I think they would rather trust that, you know, their secondary can do a good job without Fuller.
Right.
On the Texans receivers. And then he can play the first playoff game. Derrick Henry is 100%. I don't know. This time of year, that hamstring, you just never fully 100%. With that thing, and like I said last week, it only takes one move and you strain it again. I'm just afraid that this team, knowing what's on the line, they come out flat. There was in a scenario 2 years ago,
last year
where they had to win, and
hard to gauge.
They started off
as your starter
flat, but then the defense really picked them up.
Jayon Brown single-handedly kept them in
the
game.
They made a few plays on offense to keep themselves in the game, but for all intents and purposes, they didn't come out the way we thought they would.
Yeah.
And I'm just afraid that, because say what you want, they scored a lot of points, but they've given up a lot of points and they've lost two in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
well, they're 4-3 in their last seven. Everyone's talking about this Tannehill run, and it has been great. And there was this 6-1 record to start. Mm-hmm. And they're 4-3 in their last seven.
Yeah.
And they're giving up 400 yards a game and almost 30 points a game in that stretch. So it's not like they've been this elite team. They've won on goal line stands. They've won on blocked field goals. They've won on, there was this magical element to this run with Ryan Tannehill. And then, you lose two in a row against good teams. And all of a sudden you realize that it's a lot harder than you think it is. So, listen, winning you're in.
Yeah.
It's all that matters. 9-7. This 9-7 thing, I'm so tired. I don't care. I'm one of the few people, I just don't care. If you have a winning season and you make the playoffs, who cares what your record is? I know you want to go deeper into the postseason, and that's what matters here, is competing for championships, Super Bowls. But at the end of the day, 4 straight, 9-7, okay, whatever. Who cares? Get into the playoffs and give yourself a chance to play a playoff game. And if you can win one of those, all of a sudden you're playing on divisional weekend. One of the biggest weekends in football history. So should be huge. We got a huge weekend coming up with college football. Josh Ward from WNML going to join us. We'll touch base with Tennessee recruiting basketball, but also the college football playoff coming up. We know he's got some thoughts on LSU and Clemson and Ohio State and Oklahoma. We'll get to all of that when we return. Off and running, Morning Drive. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game, is streaming on the Game Nashville app. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Just reliving the Quick Lane Bowl during the commercial break. Just the sheer joy that was a quarterback throwing multiple punches at the end of a play. Maybe even catching a ref there on the cheek as well. Josh Ward from WNML joining us here from Knoxville. Josh, how was your holiday? Have you watched a single moment of bowl games? Because Derek and I, I'm not sure we've watched a single second of bowl games.
Well, here's the thing. I've watched a fair amount of the bowl games, and I've also spent time on the radio complaining about the fact that I've watched the bowl games because the quality of play, in the end of the Hawaii Bowl was dramatic. It was also not the best time, you know, doing a lot of family stuff for Christmas Eve, and right. it was very frustrating watching some of the decision making that was being made. But I put it on the television kind of as background filler at times as well.
So, Josh, just let me get your thoughts real quickly here on, before we get to some Tennessee stuff, just your thoughts real quickly on the championship games, the playoff games that are taking place tomorrow when you got LSU Oklahoma at 3 and, of course, Ohio State Clemson. You can hear them, of course, on ESPN 94.9 Game 2 right here with Cromwell. And, listen, I can't make the case for Oklahoma. Maybe you can. And then do you have any idea what takes place in the second game tomorrow?
Well, I've struggled to really come up with Oklahoma winning the game as well. I think that Jalen Hurts and that offense will be able to put up a fight. I just, even with the injury at running back, the question at running back for LSU, I still don't see it being enough. And I know there's been the talk of, okay, Oklahoma kind of reset things over the last few weeks to get ready for this game. And I don't doubt that. I think LSU's been too much for everybody this year, and I expect that to continue. You and I have talked about Clemson a lot over the course of the season, especially as not to the level that Dabo has told us the doubters have kind of showed up there, but I still think Clemson's a really good team. I think Trevor Lawrence is the better quarterback in this matchup, and I do wonder, is the knee more of a problem than we've talked about with Justin Fields going into this? But I think this is the one. I mean, the point spread shows it to where we really should throw our hands up in the air as to what could happen. But at the beginning of the season, I picked Clemson to win the national championship, and Clemson is a slight favorite in this game, so why not stick with Clemson?
Now, UT play Indiana. I'm eager to see this matchup, Big Ten, SEC. These are two teams that are they mirror one another. I believe these are two teams that are growing within their program after being down for so long. Is this a must-win for Jeremy Pruitt heading into the offseason, or is this just one of those deals where, you know what, we get extra practices, let's go out there and perform well, and whether we win or lose, that really doesn't matter in the big scheme of things?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think for Jeremy Pruitt and what he's been able to do over the last five games, the last month and a half of the season or so, I think really it helped with the goodwill that he was trying to create with Tennessee's fan base. It helped get him back maybe in that area after how the season had started. And really, I think it showed signs of legitimate progress with players and how they were developing and how the team was coming together to go in the direction of where Jeremy Pruitt wants it. Losing to Indiana, I don't think would change that. It is a game where the matchup, I think, is a little tougher than maybe some people would think on paper. Indiana's a solid football team. I think both teams are saying, hey, this would be our best win of the season if we can close it out that way. I know some fans will probably look at, okay, well, beating Indiana is not going to top some of the SEC wins, but a lot of the numbers out there say that that would be the case. And then for Indiana, a similar situation. So I think if Tennessee is able to get a win, it absolutely helps. And you could say, okay, six straight wins to close out the season, that's a positive. You can try to go sell that on the recruiting trail and see if that helps you in some kind of way. And it would just, again, to mention the goodwill, it would certainly not hurt to win the game. If Tennessee loses, I don't think it says too much. And then also, to bring it back to the bowl game discussion, I don't use bowl games very often to determine much of what will happen in the next season. If like running back Eric Gray goes out and has a big game, that's something to maybe build on. But the guys who have gotten Tennessee to this point largely are going to be leaving after this game. So I think you kind of reset the conversation and you talk about the players who are next in line to lead the way to see what they can do next year for Tennessee.
Josh Ward joining us here, WNML Morning Drive. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, and Josh. The story was that the boosters sort of strong-armed the conferences and the bowl alignments to get this matchup. And again, they had every right to do that with wins over Kentucky and South Carolina and Mississippi State or whatever. What has that has that concept changed? Has the fans, as the matchup has settled in, and like you said, people don't maybe realize that Indiana's a better team than they think, but it does, certainly doesn't have a lot of sex appeal. Has anybody sort of, has there been any regret on that decision, you think, on Tennessee fans' parts?
I don't think so. Aside from fans who currently hold tickets to the Music City Bowl, I would say that, you know, they're not too thrilled, but not matchup related. That's more personal finance situation, which I totally get, and I'm not going to push back on that one. And for those at Tennessee that wanted the Music City Bowl to have a maybe better shot at a win, and going to Nashville is, I think, a good thing for Tennessee. I think they had good points. I've said this. I don't think there's a wrong answer. If you were in favor of going to Gator Bowl in Florida or you were in favor of going to the Music City Bowl in Nashville, both have points to be made of why it would be better. If Tennessee loses to Indiana, after the fact they're talking about what could have been, Louisville would have been a better or an easier matchup for Tennessee, then after the fact I think that could come up. I also haven't sensed that much buzz to this point related to the matchup, to the game itself. And maybe that part of that's because, well, recruiting became a big topic in the middle of the month. You've had the Lamonte Turner situation, so basketball's gotten even more of the conversation, plus the holidays. So I'll be curious over the next 4 or 5 days what the conversation is on the Tennessee side as legitimate bowl practice is starting to take place, and we have the build-up to the game. I haven't sensed that much over the last couple of weeks.
Now, Josh, how much are the people in East Tennessee paying attention to this Titans-Houston matchup?
Yeah, I think a pretty fair amount. Over the last few weeks with the switch to Tannehill and what Derrick Henry's been able to do, and as the playoffs became a much more realistic possibility, the build-up to the game a couple of weeks ago when the Texans were in Nashville got a good amount of attention in Knoxville. So I think heading into this weekend, I think fans are – yeah, there's a good amount of Titans fans split up. You'll have plenty of Cowboys fans in Knoxville, and they're not too thrilled right now. Steelers fans in a similar situation. And then you have the Titans who have been battling Pittsburgh for that playoff spot. So it's gotten a good buildup, I think. And there's a good share of a number of different fan bases that are represented in Knoxville. But the following of the Titans has grown over the last, I would say, few years. And also with what the offense has done. I mentioned Tannehill and Henry and the emergence of A.J. Brown. I think fans have just looked for a reason to be excited about what they're seeing on the field, and this second half surge by the Titans has offered that because of the explosive plays they've been able to make on the offensive side as well. So I think a lot of eyeballs will be on what happens with the Titans and Texans, especially knowing the win and get in. The playoff scenarios can often be really confusing and can cause, I think, fans to check out. This one's simple. On the positive side, you win, you get in, and fans can follow that for sure.
Josh Ward joining us here from WNML. And listen, they got the Wisconsin game coming up, but you mentioned the Lamonte Turner situation, just sort of the state of Tennessee basketball right now. Every game they've played against the team that is, you know, quote unquote, more talented or better than them, they've basically lost. So what is your general view and outlook on Tennessee hoops at this point?
Yeah, it's a tough loss with Lamonte Turner being out for a number of reasons. There's the leadership that Rick Barnes continues to talk about that Lamonte was able to offer to the team. He's a really good defender. Most of the conversation is around the offensive side, and he had not been shooting well. I think he had been better at distributing the basketball from the point guard position, which is not easy to play with Rick Barnes as the head coach. He's very demanding there, and Lamonte knows how to take the criticism and the way that Rick pushes his players. So now you shift roles a little bit, and Josiah Jordan-James, the true freshman, he's a very talented, five-star player, future NBA player, he should be at least. He's a guy that will have the ball in his hands more, and he'll probably be more comfortable. So there are ways to manage within the offense, but do they keep things up defensively? Because that's a must for this team. Are they deep enough? You have 8 scholarship players right now. They have a newcomer, Santiago Vescovi, who's going to have a chance to come in and play, but how much does he play, and how comfortable is Rick Barnes with him, especially if he's running the offense, considering he has not to this point been practicing with the team? Those are just concerns. And then what if you deal with injuries moving forward? And you have a number of young players who are now going to be asked to play bigger roles as you get ready to head into conference play. So this Wisconsin game is at least a good test to see where things are after a week of preparing without Lamonte. But the timing is pretty rough for Tennessee. And I think one thing that maybe helps is the conference has a number of questions heading into league play. But Tennessee is very high on that list of teams with questions. So it's a really tough loss to lose Lamonte Turner.
Josh, obviously a huge weekend for football and college pro and as well as college hoops as well. Thank you so much. Happy holidays to you and the family, and we appreciate you joining us, man.
Yes, thank you guys. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Josh Ward there. The national championship semifinals are tomorrow, by the way. I don't know if anybody's noticed this. I have not been watching bowl games. I just can't get into it. I can't do it yet.
Yeah.
But tomorrow, I'm all in. 3 p.m. LSU, Oklahoma. 7 p.m. Clemson, Ohio State, right here on 94.9 Game 2. And listen, I want to try. I need to hear one of the three of us try to make the case for Oklahoma. And I think there is a huge story. Josh touched on it. A huge storyline in the Ohio State Clemson game that no one's really talking about. And we'll get into the college football playoff games when we return right here. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. And just a couple of quick thoughts here before we get to the. Listen, I don't know how you make the case for Oklahoma to beat LSU tomorrow. Again, 3 o'clock right here on ESPN Radio 94.9 Game 2. We'll find out about Clemson and Ohio State. I've got one factoid about that game that you need to know. Real quickly, though, yesterday was the anniversary of Reggie White's passing. And the thing that struck me, obviously I'm a Packers shareholder and a Tennessee alumni, so he hits me right in my sweet spots as a fan. Reggie White won us a Super Bowl as a fan of the Packers and meant the world to so many Tennessee Volunteer fans. You know, Chad, he's right there with Chad Clifton as two of my favorite players as a kid kind of growing up.
Oh, wow.
In the state of Tennessee, for sure. And, you know, 43 years old is just too young. A guy that I would not call a close friend, but mm-hmm. someone who I would call a colleague and a guy close enough that I could text and have a joking conversation with, 34-year-old Ed Ashoff of ESPN, a great reporter, passed away, I guess, allegedly from pneumonia, 34 years old on his birthday. His fiance, he leaves behind. Just both of his parents have passed away. He's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet in sports content and journalism. Always a smile on his face. Sat next to the guy and talk shop with him at SEC basketball tournaments every year. Like, he's just, you know, I don't know. I'm not trying to bring people down here, but, like, mm-hmm. it's just one of those moments where you take time to appreciate the people you have in your life, give everybody that you love a hug and tell them how much you love them and maybe do something nice for somebody you don't know. I don't know, because you never know when this whole trip's going to come to an end. And it's just really sad news. If you ever read or followed Ed Ashoff's work at all at ESPN, he was as nice and as smiling and as vibrant a young dude as you'll ever meet. A weird battle with pneumonia, passes away at 34 years old. I just wanted to say, you know, something about him, because he was truly a fun and vibrant and interesting, hardworking, fair reporter that I had a chance to get to know. And anybody who ever got to know him would echo that sentiment. So just wanted to get that stuff out of the way as I'm reading. You know, Reggie White at 43. Yeah,
that's young.
That's just young, that's just way young. Too young. I mean, 63 seems too young these days. So just wanted to, you know, just had something on my head there in my heart. And I wanted to get off my chest a little bit. So college football playoff games, which I know would make Ed happy. So let's talk about that. And I can't make the case for Oklahoma. I don't know if you guys can. You're going to have to run the ball 100 times, keep the ball out of Joe Burrow's hands, play a near-perfect football game. Jalen Hurts cannot turn the ball over. I mean, what list of cliches do you have, Derek, that tells you that Oklahoma can win the game? This is a better defense than Oklahoma has had in the playoff any of the last 2 years. So maybe there's a chance, but I don't know how they're going to. Clyde Edwards-Helaire's not looks like he's questionable. Probably he's not going to play tomorrow. Is that the case? I don't know what the case is for Oklahoma. I don't know how you argue Oklahoma can win the game. go for it.
Yeah, I mean, other than I believe Lincoln Riley is one of the best play callers in college football. That team can score with anyone, I believe. And they're never out of the game because they are a explosive team. They have arguably, you know, second, third best wide receiver. You know, some say he's second, some say he's third, you know, in college football, in CeeDee Lamb. But I just don't see, because Oklahoma, even though their defense started to get better this season, they still gave up a lot of points.
Right.
And I can't see. Judging by what I've seen from LSU, that has played some of the top-ranked defenses in the country and was able to put up points.
Like 500 yards of offense against
Auburn.
And
they were able to put up points on those on those defenses. And they were able to throw the ball with these. I just can't see Oklahoma winning this unless unless he puts together a perfect game plan on offense and then they do something defensively. Joe Burrow's has to be off for this team to lose. And I mean, when I mean off, he has to be Blake Bortles off.
Yikes.
In order for them to lose this game.
Well, that's
game.
Not going to happen.
Yeah, I know. So I don't see. I'm not going to say they don't have a chance to win this because they do. But it's just hard for me, judging by the way Oklahoma has played this season. They played tough games. They, you know, lost the game. They had to come back from another game. I just don't see this team beating LSU. No way, no how.
You beat Baylor by 7, but you needed overtime to do it in the Big 12 championship game. Mm-hmm. You beat Baylor by 3. You beat TCU by 4. You beat Iowa State by 1 on a last-second 2-point conversion that you played on defense. Like they're winning games, which is the point.
Their last 5 games have been
close. They haven't been good. They haven't been crushing people, and you've got to be crushing people to beat LSU. So I just don't see the see the case.
Now, I will say this. Now, if they can keep up the score, like kind of similar to what Alabama did, but Alabama didn't get those key stops on Joe Burrow, and that was kind of the problem in that game. But the issue is that I think this Oklahoma team can keep up with them offensively, but the problem is LSU's defense played better over the last couple weeks against Kellen Mond and against Jake Fromm. And I think Jalen Hurts is a step above Kellen Mond and Jake Fromm, but I still, even that defensive element, because I know going into this game, that's what a lot of people said, LSU's defense is going to be the one that holds them back from being successful this year, but even they're playing better, so it's still kind of hard to determine whether or not Oklahoma can even make this a game.
Hey, to me, Jalen Hurts, 22 carries against Iowa State, 27 carries against Baylor, 23 carries against Baylor, the second matchup, 28 carries against TCU. Mm-hmm. I think you turn Jalen Hurts into an option quarterback. And if you're Oklahoma, you run the clock. You keep Joe Burrow on the sidelines. You want 10, 12, 14 play drives for 7 minutes. You can't do the quick scoring like Lincoln Riley stuff and expect to get stops against LSU. So I just don't think there's a way that they can do that. On the flip side, the evening game, 3 o'clock, Clemson, Ohio State. Listen, I've been on Clemson all along. I picked Clemson the day the bracket came out. I'm still on Clemson. Wisconsin's a good football team, not great. But they got 5 sacks on Justin Fields because Justin Fields' knee was injured. And it is clear that he's not 100%, and it feels like it's not going away. It feels like he's going to play tomorrow on an injured knee. And if he cannot run and give them that extra dynamic, which really changes things, he is a sitting target in the pocket. And if you can't block Wisconsin's defensive line, you will not be able to block Clemson's defensive line. Show me his first scramble tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And if his first scramble tomorrow or first design run play looks like Justin Fields is fully healthy, then I think Ohio State can win the game. If he is not fully healthy and is going to be a more one-dimensional quarterback, which is still a great dimension to have because he's a great quarterback, he's a great passer, and the receivers are great, I feel very comfortable with picking Clemson to win the game.
Yeah, I think the matchup to watch is Ohio State's rush defense, because they're only giving up 99 yards a game. Rush defense against ETN in that Clemson offensive line. If Ohio State can make them one-dimensional because Ohio State has a good secondary. They got some All-Americans back there.
Great corner.
Guys that are going to be potential, you know, NFL players. If they can make Clemson and Trevor Lawrence one-dimensional, they have a better shot at winning this game. Now, on the flip side, Clemson hadn't faced a team like this.
No.
So as explosive. And like you said, it all depends on Fields. Justin Fields, if he's hobbled in any way, that diminishes what they can do.
Now, has Ohio State played a team like Clemson? No.
Nah, they played a good defensive team, but not as good as Clemson.
They haven't played anything like Clemson.
If we compare and contrast schedules, I think if you look at what Ohio State's defense was able to play when you played Penn State, even though, you know, their offense was a little
they're
up
fine.
And down.
It's just not Clemson.
Absolutely. And the same thing goes for Michigan. Michigan picked up their pace, you know, late in the season, but And obviously, it's still Michigan, and they're not Clemson. So that I think that's going to be the huge determining factor, because you got Chase Young on one side, you got Isaiah Simmons on the other side with Clemson, and that's going to be the determining factor of which defense can, you know, make the most stops. And I know that's cliche to say in football, but
no,
I think it's true.
I think you both are touching on it, because Ohio State wants to run its offense through J.K. Dobbins. Mm-hmm. Clemson wants to run its offense through Travis Etienne, and then they work off of that with the passing attack. And so it depends which defensive line holds up better in the face of that pressure. Now, again, to your point, Derek, the schedule for Clemson has been far lesser than the schedule for Ohio State. Taken as a whole, it's not even close. Ohio State's played much tougher games throughout the course of the year. But when you say something like, well, Clemson's never faced anybody like Ohio State, that's totally true. Mm-hmm. You could also then say, well, Ohio State hasn't played anybody like Clemson.
They haven't played a quarterback like Trevor Lawrence.
Or a set of receivers like those guys, not even close.
They haven't played. Yeah. But if you look at what Ohio State was able to do, I think this is going to be – Clemson's going to get tested very quickly. And Clemson's going to have to play their best, one of their best games, if not their best game of the year to this point, against Ohio State to win. Mm-hmm. Because what Ohio State, they don't have to blitz. They don't have to blitz to get to the quarterback.
But Chase Young wasn't a factor against Michigan, wasn't a factor against Wisconsin.
Exactly.
You double him.
Those other guys got to start playing.
The linebacking core for Ohio State is my concern. Yeah. They got good corners, good safeties, good defensive line. I'm concerned about the linebackers running in space with ETN and the second and third receivers.
It's going to be tough.
So I like Clemson. We'll continue to break this down a little bit as the day goes along. So we got a lot of Titans and a lot of college football playoff to do. Also, the Nashville Predators, of course, they beat Arizona on Monday night 3-2. Pekka's gotten three huge wins in the last four games. They've got points in five straight. They're 9-3-3 since the losing streak. They're still they're tied now for the wild card in the Western Conference. So a huge home and home tonight and tomorrow with the Pittsburgh Penguins before they travel to Dallas next Wednesday, of course, for the Winter Classic. And ESPN 1025 The Game is bringing you the road to Dallas, Nashville's best coverage of the Winter Classic. Keep up with all you need to know about the Winter Classic as the Preds face the Stars in Dallas on New Year's Day. Special programming and live coverage from Dallas all month long. Hit up thegamenashville.com for full programming information. Again, pregame 6, puck drop at 7 tonight, and then tomorrow, that Eastern time zone stuff, right, with 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock tomorrow. So huge, huge two-night swing for the Nashville Predators. Keep the train rolling in the same direction. Keep the ship pointed in the right direction. Nice 5-game point streak for the Nashville Predators. Two huge games tonight and tomorrow against the Pittsburgh Penguins. When we return, a D-Mace dissection as the Titans face the Texans in a Week 17 win and you're in situation. We'll discuss Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.